Welcome to Modern Sign Books. If you're interested in what makes your favorite authors tick, then you'll love hearing what they have to say in our interviews. Learn how they got started writing, the books and authors that inspired them, and much more. Meet today's hottest authors as they discuss their lives and writing with art book specialist, Roger Nichols. And don't forget to pick up a copy of your favorite books at vjbooks.com. Here's Roger.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Our guest today is a co-author with Clive Cussler of the Oregon Files novel Piranha and the Emperor's Revenge, and the author of four other books. Now, this is fascinating in and of itself, but Boyd Morrison's kind of a modern polymath. He started his career working on NASA's space station project at Johnson Space Center, where he got the opportunity to fly on the amazing Vomit Comet, the same plane used to train the astronauts for zero gravity. And after earning a PhD in engineering from Virginia Tech, he used his training to develop 11 patents at Thomson RCA. Then he managed a video game testing group at Microsoft's Xbox division. Then he became a full-time writer. And for when he's not just hanging around a typewriter or keyboard, he enjoys whitewater rafting, skiing, scuba diving, and bungee jumping. Oh, did we mention he's a professional actor appearing in films, commercial, and stage plays, and a Jeopardy champion? So, amazing guy. Currently lives in Seattle with his wife, and for his latest book, he's returned to collaborate with Clive again on a new Oregon Files novel, Typhoon Fury, published earlier this month with G.P. Putnam & Sons. We're very pleased to welcome Boyd Morrison. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, as a fourth-generation Oregonian, I have to say it's delightful that the deceptively-looking beat-up ship is called the Oregon. Do you know where that came from?
I know that when Clive wrote it in Flood Tide, I can't remember off the top of my head what okay. The Oregon's origin name story is, but I know Clive has a reason for it.
Okay. Well, we'll find out about that and pass that on to folks. I'm curious how you got involved with Clive.
Well, he was looking for a new co-author when Jack DeBrule decided to go back to writing his own stories. And he read a couple of my books and loved them. And one day I'm sitting at home and I get a call from my agent and she says, well, what would you think about working with Clive Cussler? And I said, well, the guy I've been reading books for the last 35 years, that would be awesome. And she said, okay, well, he's going to call you in 2 minutes. And so I was sat there stunned for 2 minutes until, sure enough, the phone rings and it's Clive on the other side of the line. And he says, hey, Boyd, I read a couple of your books and loved them, loved the endings, and wondered if you wanted to write the Oregon series with me. And I said, that would be fantastic. And he said, okay, we'll fly you down here in a couple of weeks and get started. And that was pretty much the length of our conversation. And as he said, 2 weeks later, I was sitting in his office brainstorming ideas for Piranha.
Well, you're the third author to work with him on this series. And it's kind of an interesting challenge to start with characters so well-developed and see where you can take them.
Yeah, it's definitely required a lot of homework. Of course, I had read the series before, but I went back and reread the books so that I knew where it was going, what had already been done, and also to keep continuity of characters and the ship. And so, yeah, it was definitely a challenge to not only continue the series, but do new things that hadn't been done in the previous 9 books.
Yeah, all right. Well, you turned out Piranha in 2015 and Emperor's Revenge came out last year. You must be a fairly fast writer.
I wish I were faster, but
writer wishes that, I'm sure.
People are expecting new stories on a regular schedule, so that's one of the most common questions I get is, when's the next story?
Yeah. Anytime we talk with authors who collaborate, we're always interested in process. So how did it work with you and Clive?
Well, it's pretty easy. I go down to his house in Phoenix for a couple of days, and we brainstorm the major ideas for the book. You know, what's the villain, what is he after, what's the historical context, which is you know, a must for all of Clive's books.
Yes.
What are the major locations, maybe talk about a couple of the action set pieces, and then that's pretty much it. And then I fly back home here to Seattle, and I write 100 pages and send them to him, and he does his magic on those pages and sends it back to me, and then we just keep going like that till the book's done.
Wow, how fascinating. Now, I found something interesting that I'm wondering in the fact that it makes a wonderful, he collaborates with a lot of authors, and they always seem to work very well. And I think what you might be bringing to it is a freshness and maybe a more modern sensibility. In looking through it, I jotted down a number of things that perhaps he might not have included, such as you mentioning people listening to Lynyrd Skynyrd and the Eagles or the Bat Cave you mentioned at one point, things like that, that might not be in his generation's cultural viewpoint.
Wow. Lynyrd Skynyrd is I thought that's kind of an old reference, but that may be, I think one reason he likes working with co-authors like me is to get a different perspective that he might not have. And so, yeah, it's both pop, I try not to make the references too current because then it kind of dates the book too quickly. But yeah, it's always fun to see what different characters, like in their own lives and to make them feel more like they're real people.
Right. Well, I've got to love anybody that quotes Han Solo and the "don't get cocky" line in there. So that was fun. I also want to mention that your research has got to be really fantastic, because every time I see a new term or a new piece of equipment, I look it up and there it is. So you're not making this up as you go. You're really doing the stuff.
Yeah, it's fun to not only to use real technology and places in the stories, but also kind of think about into the near future, what's going to be possible. So maybe it's not possible now, but that in the next few years, somebody is going to be using it. And it's funny, I just saw on the cover of Popular Mechanics, there's the cover image is a soldier climbing the outside of a cargo ship to sneak on board. And that was one of the opening scenes in Piranha 3 or 4 years ago. And yeah. So obviously the military is now capable of doing that. So it's kind of fun to see those things.
Yeah. The plot of this is pretty fascinating. And I love the historical tie-ins, because that always gives it a certain gravitas. And here there's a tie-in to World War II and a new and very dangerous drug.
Yeah. It's, that came as an idea because, I had been reading about, during World War II, many of the armies, particularly the Germans, used drugs to enhance their soldiers. So they had, the Germans had a drug called Pervitin, which was basically speed or amphetamines. Mm-hmm. And they would give it out in the supplies like they would give cigarettes and chocolate, and particularly to the tank crews. To let them stay fighting for 3 days on end without sleep. And so I'm sure that different armies and their scientific organizations were doing research on other drugs. And so I just took that to the next level and imagined what kind of drug they would love to have for their soldiers. And in this book, it actually makes them kind of super warriors, where they can withstand injuries without as much pain as a normal soldier would endure, and so that they could keep fighting. And so it was fun to see what the ramifications of that would be.
What's interesting to me is I love kind of the kind of ideas whose time has come. I just happened to be the other day rewatching Iron Man 3. And one of the threats there is a drug that makes super soldiers. Then, of course, you've got the whole Steve Rogers, Captain America thing. So that's a meme that's out there. But you worked it so fascinatingly. I don't want to give away all of the good plot points, but it really runs as a thread all the way through this. And it's absolutely absorbing, I'll tell you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. When you start out with something like this, I just have this feeling that there are places in the book where you're writing where you just sit down and smile at the typewriter when you finish a particularly cool passage. And I'm thinking about some of the things such as the pig, which I want one of.
Yeah, the pig was definitely something that was in the series before I came along, but it's always fun to add my own, twists to it, and little capabilities that maybe it hadn't been revealed before. Mm-hmm. And so it was, it seemed like a good opportunity to use that for the segment in this book. In Piranha, I think I had established that it could be driven remotely. Mm-hmm. And in this book, we see it used as a rescue vehicle and fighting off with a helicopter. So that was fun to do.
One of the things that I feel you're really good at is describing areas so I can visualize them. And this is the theater of the mind where the reader is the cooperator along with you on that. But the giant underground lair, let's put it that way, is so vividly described that I can see that as a movie, and I just hope they've optioned that puppy already.
That would be fun. I got that idea because just in the past few years, there was an enormous cave system that was discovered in Vietnam, and there's some of the biggest caves in the world, and there was a story done on National Geographic showing the photos of them. And it's just absolutely astounding how big they are. I would love to see them someday, but you see the picture of the person and you can bear their little dot on the floor of the cave. And these caves are, these real caves are so big that they could hold 40-story buildings inside them. And so I thought, well, that would just make a great location for a adventure story. And so of course I wanted to add my own little action twist on that, but I don't know if I want to give it away right now.
Oh, that's okay.
It's something I've never seen done in a book before.
And I know what you're talking about, and I absolutely loved it. So it's one of those points where you put the book down, and you just smile gleefully at the idea as it rolls around in your head.
Oh, good.
I do love that part of it. I also describe things. I mentioned that. Much of this takes place in the Philippines. Did you visit? And because it sounds like you've been there.
Well, thank you. That's a good compliment because I have never been to the Philippines. I've traveled extensively in my life, but that's one country I haven't been to. But the great thing about the internet these days is I can visit remotely from my office. And so it's great because people who have visited or live there post all kinds of photos. So a lot of a key scene takes place on the island of Corregidor, which is in the middle of Manila Bay. And I could go through photos of almost every inch of the island, including the extensive tunnel system inside, and feel like I've been there and feel like I can describe it to somebody else who maybe has not been there. And, I use Google Maps so I can see the satellite images and see exactly. So I planned out the route for people to take while they were going around the island. And it's somebody who's been there hopefully would say, yeah, that pretty much is how they would have to do it.
That's interesting because that's the point which I said, hey, this guy has been there, because you talk about the various tunnels and why they hook up together and what goes to here and there. And wow, this is it really helps in visualizing when you talk about it. We go down to this tunnel, you turn left and you go that way, etc. So that was wonderful, too.
Great.
I want to mention something else that was a fun fact that I discovered. I love people that send me to the reference books afterward. That Earl Silas Tupper designed watertight containers for the U.S. in World War II, thus Tupperware eventually. Did not know that.
I didn't either until I was trying to figure out. So I don't want to give too much away, but right. I needed some way for this drug to survive for 70 years without deteriorating. And, I knew that metal would be eroded away. And so I thought it had to be plastic of some kind. And so when I was doing my research, I saw that Tupper was creating his Tupperware products at that time. And I thought, well, that's perfect. And it seemed reasonable that if he was making stuff for the Army, then it would be reasonable that would fit into the storyline.
Great. Well, it certainly does. I want to delve in a little your background, because as I was reading off that stuff, I went, holy mackerel, this guy has done stuff I really would like to have done myself. Tell me about the Vomit comic, because that's the place where they do the big arc and you get to be weightless for, I think it's 25 or 30 seconds or so.
Yeah, that's right. You fly what are called parabolas. So the plane goes from 20,000 to 40,000 feet and back down. And when it's nosing over in its dive, that's when you get the 25 seconds of weightlessness. And it does that 40 times in a row. And it comes by its nickname, the Vomit Comet, honestly, because I would say at least half the people who fly on board get sick during the flights, because it really does a number on your stomach. And everybody has a little patch behind their ear that gives you some scopolamine to keep you from getting sick. And even with that, people would still get sick. I flew on it three times, and I'm happy to say I never vomited.
So if I were going to know I was going to do that, I would plan. You got 25 seconds, which isn't a long time. I make 30-second commercials for a living, and I know how long that is. So what did you plan to do? I mean, you've only got a short time, but you would probably not just play around. You'd probably have a plan to execute.
Yeah, you have to really plan it ahead to know exactly what we're going to do during the short time we have. And let's see, one of the times we were testing out a crew evacuation system from the space station. Mm-hmm. And so at the time, we literally had no idea how long it would take people to evacuate through a hatchway, to know in an emergency how long the astronauts would have to get out. And so we literally did a test of how many people could we get through a hatchway in a certain amount of time. And we did it with different parameters. We had a dummy in a stretcher that we would take through the door. I played an injured crew person that they had to take through. And so we did a lot of different permutations of all of those to get some data. And then, of course, at the end, for the last two or three parabolas, when we think we've accomplished our job, then we get to play around and do somersaults and fly around. And that's a lot of fun.
Oh, I only dream about that as an old space hound myself. That is fantastic. I also want to talk, if you don't mind sharing, about your patents. That's kind of cool to have some in your name.
Yeah, actually, I need to update my bio, because I'm up to 16 patents now, and those were all ideas that I had when we were at when I was at RCA Thompson, which is makes TVs and satellite systems. And all of the patents are for inventions related to on-screen program guides and digital television, because I was working there back in the late 90s when satellite systems and HDTV were just being developed. And so I have, one of my patents is for when you have your DVR and you want to search for a show based on a name or an actor or something. That's a patent that I have.
Cool.
Along with some other people. Or when it suggests, when your DVR suggests things based on your previous watching history, that's also a patent that I'm a co-holder on.
Wow.
So, it's a lot of things like that.
So it's a neural network that actually learns. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the invention is for how the TV records your history of things you watched and then develops recommendations to you based on that. So if you've watched a lot of movies with Clint Eastwood, it will say, oh, Clint Eastwood's going to be doing an interview on the Tonight Show. You may want to watch that.
Ah, cool. Well, obviously, there's got to be something amazingly fulfilling about all that stuff, I would think.
Yeah, it's really cool to be able to call myself an inventor. That's not something I ever thought would be on my resume.
Well, speaking of on your resume, I do have to ask about Jeopardy. Everybody loves Jeopardy, and you were champion, which is not easy to do.
Yeah, I was a one-day champion. I couldn't quite pull it out on the second day. I was leading going into the final Jeopardy, but couldn't get the final Jeopardy question right. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, it was a lot of fun. I had been a longtime watcher and wanted to go on the show. And finally, my wife noticed that they were doing some tryouts. So I auditioned and they brought me on and had a great time. My wife came down, was in the audience and watched. But I think she was more nervous than I was watching.
Did you have a category that you just loved? You were like the vomit comet for 200.
Please. Yeah, well, it was funny. I had been living in Indiana just a couple of years before that. And one of the categories was Indiana. So I think I ran the category on that.
All right. Every once in a while, whether you notice it or not, here come the gods of chance on your side.
Yeah. And then, of course, I got Supreme Court justices as one of the categories, and I didn't get a single one of those right.
But there you go. It giveth and it taketh away.
Exactly.
So let me ask you about writing again, and that has to do with your own personal style. You're mapping out the major stuff with Clive, but when you sit down to write 100 pages, do you try to outline it first, or you just say, "Oh, let's go. We know where we're going."
I usually need to know where it's going so that what I'm working on now makes sense in the future context of the story. So I plan ahead in very broad terms. You know, I like to know maybe what's going on in the next 5 chapters. And then down the road, I want to know where these characters are heading so that what I'm writing now makes sense later. Mm-hmm. But of course, there's a lot of going back and rewriting once I get down the road.
Well, then you get down there and you say, oh, if I put this in back up here, it will reinforce that up there. I know that happens. So
yeah, and then there's some, you know, serendipity involved too. For example, in Emperor's Revenge, I introduced a character early in the book who was a computer expert for the Monaco police. And I thought she was just going to be a throwaway character. And then later in the book, I realized I needed a mole inside the Monaco police. And I thought, well, I've already introduced her. She would be perfect.
Excellent. Excellent. There are some joys to doing that. It's, you know, it's a solitary kind of profession, but, and the feedback takes a long time to come through, but boy, when it does, it can be wonderful. How much fun is it being a published author?
It's great. I mean, it's fun to get, you know, people writing to me and say, oh, I had a great time with your books. And sometimes you get really poignant letters of people who say, oh, this helped me while I was sitting at my mother's bedside while she was in hospice. And it took me away from the horrible situation for a couple of hours to just immerse myself in your book. And so, you know, I think when you get those kinds of things, you realize you're not, this isn't just entertainment. It's also a way for people to escape, you know, things in their lives that maybe they need a little respite from.
Yeah, that is very fulfilling stuff. Is there anything we've not touched on you would like to make sure that our listeners know about today?
Well, the other thing that I need to update my bio on is I actually have 6 books of my own instead of just.
Oh my gosh!
And so. I have 4 books in my Tyler Locke adventure series, and then 2 standalone novels.
Okay. Well, we're happy to share that with people too. And you have a website?
I do. It's boydmorrison.com.
I do. And okay, this is the final question you always get. What, give us a peek behind the curtain. What are you working on now?
I'm working on the next Oregon Files book with Clive, and I think that's on the schedule for next year sometime. And then I do have some ideas for books of my own. So one is another adventure book, and another is a young adult thriller. And I don't know when those will see the light of day, but you know, it's a good problem to have so many stories to work on that you can't do them all at the same time.
And we're delighted that you have them, because you're obviously very good at what you do, and we really appreciate that. Our guest this morning has been Boyd Morrison. His latest is with Clive Cussler is Typhoon Fury. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Oh, you're welcome. And if you find out the answer to the question about the Oregon origin story, I would love to hear that, because I know I've heard it. I just forget what it
all
was.
Right. We'll do that for sure. Thanks again.
Okay, thanks.
And keep writing.
I will.
All right. Great. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Modern Sign Books. Make sure to follow and comment on who you would like to hear next. Feel free to check out our other author interviews. And visit vjbooks.com to pick up signed copies of all of your favorite books.